Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at tanger.com.
There will be times when the struggle seems impossible. I know this already. Alone, unsure, dwarfed by the scale of the enemy. Remember this. Freedom is a pure idea. It occurs spontaneously and without instruction. Random acts of insurrection are occurring constantly throughout the galaxy. There are whole armies, battalions that have no idea that they've already enlisted in the cause. Remember that the frontier of the rebellion is everywhere, and even the smallest act of insurrection pushes our lines forward. And then remember this. The Imperial need for control is so desperate because it is so unnatural. Tyranny requires constant effort. It breaks. It leaks. Authority is brittle. Oppression is the mask of fear. Remember that. And know this. The day will come when all these skirmishes and battles, these moments of defiance, will have flooded the banks of the Empire's authority, and then there will be one too many. One single thing will break the siege. Remember this. Try.
Happy Heresy, then. Welcome to the Desert of the Real. It's the Great Escape. You don't like my point of view. You think I'm insane, but we are indeed forever trapped in Carrie's prom night unless we can find the way out of here. There must be some way out of here, said the Joker to the thief, and that's why you have arrived at the virtual Alexandria, and I welcome you, and I hope you've enjoyed that intro for those of you watching on video. My name is Miguel Connor, and I am your Pompidus of Gnosis. We're back live after a brief break, and it is so good to see everybody on this moon day, and very excited about our guest, an individual whose work is extremely important, extremely relevant, and certainly vibes with the ethos of Aeon Bide, and that is Saul Luckman. Saul, how are you today?
I'm great. I'm totally grooving on that. Grooving on your intro. Thanks for having me, Miguel. It's great to speak with you again.
Always a pleasure, man. Always good to see you here, even though I follow your work on Facebook, Substack, and wherever else you're causing trouble to the Archons.
That's right. So, havoc.
Yes, exactly. And with us, too, we've got Graham Pong. Graham, how are you doing? And thank you for being our wingman today, as Vance has his Clark Kent identity today.
Oh, it's always a pleasure to be here, Miguel. Right now, I'm still mulling around the idea, do I actually want to survive the apocalypse, given all those people building bunkers and super yachts that are going to survive? Do I want to be in a world with them? Tag.
Exactly. Well, there is no way out of here. You can check out anytime you want, but you can never leave. I mean, I always thought these idiots building bunkers and yachts, when the apocalypse come, what's going to stop their henchmen from turning on them? So unless they have some sort of device on their heads or something like that. So I don't know. I think they need to keep us like docile lambs. I think that's always been part of the game. And of course, this show is called How to Survive the Apocalypse, 2025 Apocalypse, and an apocalypse. We can see it many ways. The end of the world, the end of many worlds, the revelation, the tearing apart to see the real truth. So regardless, the game is the same, and that is to wake up, take shove those red pill suppositories where the Archon black sun don't shine, and continue to individuate and grow. So, and as always, good to see everybody in the chat. Hope everybody's doing well. You're having a good Christmas, great holidays. As always, if you have any questions for Saul, please super chat them. and we will get to them or complaints against me. Not much else housekeeping. I'll have some news later on. Still a lot of good shows through December, a lot of summary shows and some good topics too, and great shows already being planned in January. So Saul, your book, tell us about your book, Get Out of Here Alive, which we will tease today. But yeah, tell us about the book and when it comes out and what's it all about, man.
Yeah, well, to stay on the musical theme, it's about going out through the indoor. So Led Zeppelin, you know,
yes, yeah.
Opposite title, right? So yeah. The outdoor. So Get Out of Here Alive is a riff on Jim Morrison's lyric from 5 to 1,
right?
And his most famous biography was No One Here Gets Out Alive. And I also mentioned the Led Zeppelin going in through the outdoor in this case, out through the indoor rather. So the book is about that, and it starts off from a kind of musical perspective of my time, from my time living in Paris and spending a lot of time reading Jim Morrison's poetry and listening to his music, visiting his grave. And then it takes off into a lot of territory having to do with shamanism, inner alchemy, energy work, and various strategies of doing and not doing to deal with this huge louche fest that we're in right now, to protect ourselves from it, obviously, to pull away from it, yes, to fortify ourselves, and even to de-louche the louche fest so that we're actually pulling energy away from the, if you like, the archontic host. we're actually disempowering it. So you're talking about the, you know, the apocalypse, and I can see how this narrative of disempowering that which has been disempowering people would be a very important theme to tease out over the course of the coming months and years.
Very true. And for so the audience know, when does your book come out? Because I'm sure a lot of them will be going on Amazon and so forth. When does your book officially come out?
Well, what I would love for people to consider doing is showing up on my Substack, saulluckman.substack.com. And there you'll find links where you can go and download a free copy of the book now before it comes out as a review copy. So if you would like to read and leave a review when the book comes out, you're welcome to do so. And I would really appreciate your help. It would help me get into the algorithm and get the book more popular when it comes out. And the actual release date when the review would be published would be March 20th. So I'm releasing it at the spring equinox and giving it a boost from that particular timing as well. So it's called Get Out of Here Alive. It's subtitled Inner Alchemy and Immortality.
Yeah, and I will have it on the show notes, whether you're listening or watching it on one of the video platforms. So definitely check it out. Yeah, and very cool. I always think, well, if I went to Paris, one of the first things I would see would be Jim Morrison's grave. I know it sounds strange, but it must have been a pretty cool experience, huh?
Yeah, I've made some little kind of promo trailer book/music videos, and one of them is about that experience. You can see that on my Substack and various other places where I've posted that. I think I have it on YouTube. And yeah, it was basically a 24/7 party. People would stay past closing hours in the cemetery. They would climb over the gates. They would show up on pilgrimages from all over the world and hang out. And yes, it was basically a kind of small scale ongoing rave experience where you could meet all kinds of fascinating people and engage in all kinds of interesting activities.
Very cool. Yes. Recently we had Paul Weil, and he talked about his spiritual biography of Jim Morrison. It was very cool. So I'm glad Jim is getting some sort of resurrection, especially as a modern shaman and a leader of the mystery tradition. But what do you think? I mean, you have an individual, let's say Jim Morrison, and others we've talked about, Elvis, David Bowie. I mean, and it seems that they break so much ground, but they never last long enough. Even with Bowie, his body was broken by the end of the 20th century. He had a heart attack in the early 21st century. The damage was done. He was never really himself. But what do you think swallows individuals like Jim Morrison, and what can be done? Or is that just part of the archetype?
Yeah, I mean, it may be part of the archetype. I mean, to give you a shout out, you've got a book coming out in April that I was, blessed to be able to read and provide an early review for, The Occult Elvis. And you go into this in great depth. And I know you have your own ideas on this topic. And it's fascinating. If you look at it from an alchemical perspective, basically they begin contemplating their own destruction. It's essentially what they do is they stare into the black sun, the central sun, and it sucks them in and destroys them. I think that's the short answer to your question. So that's the archetype of archetypes, really, the central sun is. And when you basically begin flowing into it without having fortified your personal power enough, it can destroy you. And, you know, you ask the question over and over again, why would somebody like Elvis destroy himself in the way he did and go down that path? Right. And I think the answer, you can look at it certainly from a psychological standpoint. You can bring in Jungian psychology if you would like to. But I think the alchemical answer is the most satisfying to me. And it's that they basically get on a path that's like that has such gravity that they can't get off of it.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I do give possibilities. And in this new David Bowie book that I'm writing, I think got to start my third draft. And of course, at the end of the day, I'm speculating. I wasn't there. You never know what's deep in the heart. You can relate to somebody who had issues with drugs and other things, but we'll never know. But what are they attracted to, Soul? The secrets of the universe? Or what is this black sun you're talking about?
Well, the black sun, from an alchemical perspective, I mean, it's, you know, we see references to this all the time. It's all over the world. And it covers ancient and even some modern architecture. It's laced through Freemasonic thought, and it's everywhere, and it's always kind of staring you in the face. I actually think of it as the archetypal energy of like a Kali, a sort of the destroyer. It's also probably the progenitor of many things too, because there's this idea that you could go into the black sun and kind of come out the other side. There's some people who believe that. Where you know the wormhole becomes the black hole becomes like a white hole, you know, on the other side, and it births a new experience and that kind of thing. So who knows for sure if that's how it works? But in any case, it's a phenomenon that gives rise to a lot of the weird physics that we experience, and the more Newtonian gravitational aspects of our so-called reality, and the quantum effects, where it's kind of assembling and disassembling particles into waves, you know, all the time. So it's kind of this player that's really not acknowledged in mainstream science. So there, it's very hard for anything to be explained because this massive piece is missing.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, Kali is sexy. I mean, we all want to be in the halls of Valhalla drinking and doing poetry, but there's just something really sexy about Ragnarok, right? Destruction, becoming a hero, seeing what's on the other side as everything falls apart. So yeah, I can see the black sun being very attractive to especially those who are sensitive, right? Looking for the bigger questions in life, and often people who are broken, right? We're broken and we want to know why and what to do about it.
Well, the thing about it is that the people we've been talking about developed a certain amount of personal power. Mm-hmm. And we could talk about how they did that. In some ways, they stole or inadvertently took power from their fans and from the attention that they received. This is one of the reasons people want to become famous, is that it's a shortcut to personal power in many ways. But when you get that and you haven't done the inner shadow work, which is one of the subjects in my book, you're not balanced and strong enough to be able to wield that kind of power. It might be great to have it, but can you actually use it productively without having it destroy you? And so that kind of power inevitably seeks power. And the big power is the central sun. And so it's like getting into a kind of power struggle with something that's much greater than you and that you're not prepped to be able to withstand. The idea is that if you develop enough power, you can kind of go out into that territory and not be destroyed by it, not be sucked in by it, but skirt it. In the same way that in shamanism, shamans who are lighting the fire from within and going out into the great sea of awareness around us, they can fly past the eagle. They can fly past Sente-Yodel and not be eaten by it. And that's probably, Sente-Yodel is probably a reference to the black sun.
No, makes sense. Love it. Yes. And as he read in my book in Tribes, if you're going to find somebody who's mentally fragmented and a drug addict and out of his mind, it's going to be the shaman. That's how sometimes they end up that way because, yeah, they're going to places where you might not just come back. And that's what.
Yeah, right. Like. The archetype for one of the common ways of seeing that shamanic energy, I don't think it's necessarily how it has to be. There's nothing that is built into that archetype that says you must be self-destructive. And I've met very, very wise, powerful people on that path who didn't strike me as self-destructive at all. So I know it's at least positive. Or it's possible, rather. The question is, if your goal is to get out of here alive, can you amass enough power and can you do it in a responsible enough way to go to the next level, which is basically cheating death? It's giving a single finger salute to the Grim Reaper. It's blowing this popsicle stand, you know, and heading off into other experiences.
And of course, I'm assuming it's a play on words, right? Get out of here alive. Most people aren't even alive anyway. Most people are dead, right? I mean, just living, being truly alive is a victory in itself.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I write song lyrics and I've got a couple lyrics that speak to this. One is the walking dead don't realize that only the empty vessel can become full, you know. The idea that people are dead is also something I address in lyrics that go, most people cheat life. Why not cheat death instead?
Well said, yeah. As the Gospel of Thomas says, you will not taste death if you can decipher Jesus's words. So,
right.
It's all there as the mystics have said it. So central to your book, and of course, a lot of your work and interviews that we've done, is the idea of the simulation. We are not in a real world. Tell the audience about your ideas of what the simulation is and how do we break through it? How do we break on through to the other side? Quoting Mr. Morrison again.
Well, if we're going to stay on a music theme, so I recently had correspondence with Chris DeBerg. Do you remember?
Lady in Red, Mr. Lady?
Yeah, yeah. But
I love it. Yeah, don't cheat the ferryman. That's
right?
It. Yes. So,
because at the end of my book, I mention this book and I explain how this song and the video that accompany it are basically emblematic of the hero's journey past the ferryman into the great unknown, the unexplored territory. And how he's basically mapping out that hero's journey to the afterlife, essentially. So it was very, very fascinating. But he at least gave me some positive feedback. I had reached out and said, hey, you might find this interesting. And he said, really cool, and that kind of thing. So people go watch the video. It's a 1982 song that still has a lot of relevance these days. Don't pay the ferryman. In terms of the simulation, you know, I know it's very trendy for people to think that we're in some kind of mechanical simulation. And I know that we have all of this push towards AI and transhumanism, which would support seeing things that way. my perspective is that that's actually not what's going on, even if it appears we appear to be trending that way. And we might end up, you know, where people are basically living in VR realities, you know, with headsets on or, you know, plugged in some way. Who knows? You know, anything's possible with all the craziness going on. But I believe that we are just in a dream. This is a dream world, and that is certainly a Matrix theme out of the Matrix. You're living in a dream world, Neo. Mm-hmm. So I feel that the simplest explanation, you know, we're back to kind of like Occam's razor. Is it really plausible that we're all somehow hoodwinked in this simulation where we're plugged in and we're on some kind of mothership and there's part of us that's playing, you know, Ready Player One kind of stuff? Or are we just in a different aspect of the overarching reality or the overarching fantasy, a different wavelength, a different frequency? Because, you know, then we go and we dream at night. And if you learn how to go through the various dream gates or alchemically through the rooms of that you would pass through, it's the same thing. There are seven of these gates that you learn to pass through. Each time you go through another gate, you are in a distinctly different reality, a different frequency zone. It has different natural laws. You have to deal with it differently. There are different creatures and beings that you face and have to deal with. So it just seems to me that we are on a continuum, and we have gotten lost in this little tightly circumscribed place of reason, to use a shamanic phrase. We're in the place of reason, and we're locked down in this belief that this is all there is, that we can't experience anything beyond our five senses that has any reality or meaning. But people who do this type of inner voyaging, they know that that's complete bullshit.
For sure it is. Yeah, it reminds me of the Niels Bohr quote, you're not thinking, you're merely being logical. There is something beyond the idea of reason and religious superstition, sort of nonlinear thinking, holistic thinking that can break us through into higher realities, if you would. I mean,
well, ironically, Miguel, one of the things that can do that is becoming a great logician. Mm-hmm. But I mean a multidimensional logician, where you begin to understand that because there are different dimensions to reality, different levels of consciousness that we can experience, there are actually different levels and different versions of cause and effect. So you have to think more like, you know, the proverbial 5G chess player here, mm-hmm. rather than just a planar chess player on this flat board. It goes up and down too. And that's where you have to trend to be able to see these connections that I'm talking about. Really, this is the way that that mysticism and extremely pure logic are sort of the same thing.
I was going to sit there and jump in here and say this hit some of my work where that those various different levels are connected via Gödel's incompleteness theorems. Tag.
Cool. I remember reading Gödel, Escher, Bach, you know, years ago. I'm kind of being blown away.
What do you think? So, Graham, do you think when people say bring up the simulation theory, what are your thoughts on this about the nature of our reality?
Well, I sit there and say that given you have rules like you can't wear white after Labor Day, I guarantee to a certain extent we are living within a simulation. Fashion is a simulation. There's a lot of things that are clearly, you know, human creation, and it's, you know, it's a matrix we're going through. Now, when you get lower, like things like our atom simulation, I can't sign off on that. So it's like, yeah, we're definitely in some sort of simulation. How deep that simulation goes is an open question for me.
I guess my position would be that dreams are a simulation, or they are just a reality. So me, you do not have to be in a technological simulation to be in a type of simulation.
Oh, absolutely. Dreams are just sort of one level up. And when we're talking about different levels of dimensions of reality, they're basically like one level up from the conscious level. They're like the unconscious level.
Yes. I get into that a little bit in Get Out of Here Alive, where I I look at the dark sea of awareness as the realm of the unconscious, sort of with a capital U. And that would be, in this model, that would be the wellspring for the conscious reality simulation that we're in. It's really the unconscious reality simulation, back to your point, Miguel. But so all of this would kind of well up from, you know, what Jung was exploring, the territory that would be the dream world, the other world, the dream time, however you want to describe that, where we, you know, can activate our dream bodies.
Makes sense. Yeah. And even in quantum physics, I think it says, you know, all reality is just ripples in the quantum foam, little disturbances, and this is it. So, and at the same time, yeah, we say the word simulation because we have to live by the mythologies of our times, and the simulation just works because we're not, I mean, the closest we can get is obviously, you know, the Matrix, quantum physics, all that. The true reality is far, far vaster, but the mythology of the simulation makes sense, even though mathematically, and this is from, I don't know, Neil Bostrom to Neil deGrasse Tyson to so many other scientists who say that mathematically the simulation theory just makes perfect sense. There's a high probability of it. And in a way, the Gnostics are now vindicated. And here's a quote I had, which I always liked, which goes, it's from David Pierce, and it goes, "The simulation argument is perhaps the first interesting argument for the existence of a creator in 2,000 years." What do you think, Saul? Do you think that, at least outside of football, this is something that could bring both sides together, all sides together?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, that's an interesting quote. I could see looking at it in both directions, of course, but clearly if there is actually a simulation, someone or something is giving rise to the simulation. This is
writing the code.
But it doesn't, for me, this concept of the creator is extremely slippery, because if one begins to explore the full extensions of the idea of like a unity in consciousness, or even a unified theory in terms of physics and science, if you don't go all the way, then you're just back in duality and dualisms. So ultimately, we are on a circle. One of the biggest symbols in my work these days is the Ouroboros. It's the alchemical image of the snake consuming its own tail. The creator is the created. We are the creator and the created at the same time. So when we look for that elusive creator, if we are looking outside of ourselves, we will never find it.
Exactly. Yeah. And since you're bringing up alchemy, one of the themes of your book is the idea of pragmalchemy or pragalchemy.
Pragmalchemy.
Yeah. Well, how do you pronounce it?
I say pragmalchemy.
Yeah, I like that. Pragmalchemy. Your method of generating a philosopher's stone by simply absorbing what's around you, what's positive?
Well, pragmalchemy is a body and energy work technique that grew out of my work in writing this book and all the things leading up to writing this book and my own practice of various kinds of body work and energy work. So it is an extension, if you will, of some of the techniques that I shared in Get Out of Here Alive. The pragmalchemy work involves myofascial decompression, elements of Pilates, yoga, breath work, and visualizations and inner alchemy to pool as much energy as possible into the body and to store it in the body. Down in the kind of Dantean area, it's sort of the cauldron of inner alchemy. And when you begin storing it and packing it down into that area, it begins to create a more concentrated area of energy. Certainly the Taoists and the Qigong masters, they understand to some degree what I'm talking about. Right. This is where they were so focused on, was actually working that Dantean area as the seat of personal power. This is also, if you get into shamanism, like Castaneda's work, Don Juan, they always talk about that area is the seat of personal power. And literally shamans could extend an energy beam or a wave or a hand-like thing out of that area and accomplish real-world feats. You have Don Hinaro holding himself up in a waterfall by using the energy from his little Dantian area to hold onto the sides of the running stream. You know, he should have fallen to his death, but he didn't. He was able to do that. So, you know, assuming that that's a possibility and not a work of pure fiction, although that's another question we could get into, is what is fiction and what is reality?
Exactly.
That's very interesting that you can actually use this power in such worldly ways. The idea is you can also use it in otherworldly ways, i.e. getting out of here alive.
No, makes sense. And I love all the alchemical stuff that I was reading in your book. At the same time, we are talking about simulation, how to break through it. But there is, of course, there is always an adversary. And in your book, you bring in the dragon. And I'm thinking of, speaking of alchemical, the very alchemical movie, John Borman's Excalibur, and Merlin going, "Can you see that dragon all around us?" But of course, yours is the negative one, because this is the dragon that feeds off our louche. Maybe tell the audience a little bit about your conception of the dragon.
Sure. Yeah, that's certainly a main theme in the book. You read my last book, which was called The World, Cult, and You, and I call this same entity or collection of entities the great parasite. So I switched my metaphors in Get Out of Here Alive, and I was working with the hero's journey. So I needed something other than a parasite, and the dragon seemed the most obvious choice for that. So the dragon is basically a version of the great archon, the demiurge, Saklas, Yaldabaoth, those types of beings, Jehovah.
Yeah.
I go there. You know, many names, Ahriman, many names throughout history have been given to this entity that in my book, I describe as a vast apex predator from the dark sea of awareness who found our world glowing brightly with all of this little louche farm going on the planet with all these humans giving up this energy. And it came here to feed on us. And it realized that the easiest way to do so would be to control our minds. And the way to do that was to give us its own mind as our operating system so that we have to think through its mechanisms. And therefore, all it has to do is sort of mimetically change the feed using pure energy or mental types of implants like the Mind Flayer and Stranger Things, right, or using propaganda, sending out Elon Musk with a tweet or whatever. And it can create these mimetic shifts. You know, René Girard, the great French writer, philosopher, talked a lot about a theory of mimetic desire. It's extremely easy to control the human herd by shifting its desire point. What is desirable? And you can create louche by swinging that back and forth. So louche is this energy. I call it consciousness as it slides toward unconsciousness. That's what louche is. It's where you're losing your own mind, your own energy, and it's being absorbed by something else. I see it as kind of going up a cult-like food chain all the way to the top, where the dragon sits on top of that pyramid, basically feeding on all of the energy coming up to it. Now, there's a lot more to this story, because we could demonize the dragon and we could get all bent out of shape about this situation, but we played a role in bringing the dragon here, and we have a role in escaping the dragon and perhaps taming or defeating the dragon. So there's a lot more to this than just woe is us.
Yeah, getting angry at it it's a paradox. It plays into its hands.
Exactly.
You know, to fight the empires to be infected by its derangement. Yeah.
Yes. As soon as you go to victim consciousness, you are giving up your power to the very thing that you're upset with.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. And so this is the idea of Paul Levy's Wetika, right? It holds our destruction, but also our salvation, or others. You know, the dragon does hold the treasure, even though he is sort of eating upon us, and even though it's the scariest place we'll ever go, or we're afraid to look, but that's where we need to go.
Yeah, I mean, certainly Wetiko would be another way of conceptualizing what I'm talking about here. And I mentioned Paul and his work in my book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.
Yes, and we recently had him, and yeah, he talked about quantum science and all that. So it's really good. And on an interest, I know this is kind of a side note, but like we're looking for ideas in music. And David Bowie talks about mind parasites in his what's the album he did, his apocalyptical album, Diamond Dogs. Of course, he was very much influenced by William Burroughs. So, and I'm sure you know, William Burroughs was into the mind parasites louche like way back into the 50s and 60s. So he was like he was a pioneer in this sort of Gnostic stuff. But
basically all about that.
But what?
Naked Lunch is almost all
very much. And of course he was studying, you know, the Mayans, getting ideas, of course, you know, and then Carlos Castaneda, he was into the whole South American mythology. That's insanely Gnostic. It's really all about archons and mind parasites. It's pretty amazing how universal this idea is.
Yeah. All kinds of different terms for archons that come out of the Mesoamerican shamanism. I mentioned some of those in my book. It's amazing how on the pulse of that they were. And like you said, how aligned with basic Gnostic concepts that all is.
Because it's got to be true in some way or another. But I was watching... I was so exhausted from our daughters having their big performances in the Nutcracker and all this holiday stuff. So I know I'm weird, but I like to watch a nice horror movie to relax and make myself feel better. Maybe it's a catharsis. So I put on Smile 2 because it was, I don't know, free on Paramount or something. And I was like, well, this is pretty cool because both movies, Smile, all are about this mind parasite being that takes over your head and then creates all these illusions of insecurity and scares you. And so what it's doing is just feeding off of your insecurities, your anger. It's creating illusions about what people are doing to you and what you're seeing. And before you know it, it's completely fed off of you and it just moves on to the other host. So I know that they don't go much into the mythology, but whoever did the movie obviously must have some idea. Of course, as somebody says in the chat, yeah, you've got Colin Wilson's The Mind Parasites, one of the first really mature concepts of this idea. And of course, well, 2,000 years ago, the Gnostics and their idea of the counterfeit spirit was straight out of The Mind Parasite. So it's all there, man, isn't it?
It is. And one of the things I find fascinating, but not particularly surprising, is that people talk about this mind parasite. They write books about it. They include it in movies. This character shows up all the place. But rarely does anyone ever talk about what you can do about it.
That's my next question, even though that's one thing nobody wants to tackle.
Yeah, people, I mean, everybody just stop listening. Unsubscribe to my channels right now because you probably don't want to hear what I'm going to say. But there are strategies for actually dealing with this situation. And, you know, you can go into disbelief about that or you know, maybe I'm triggering people right now. I know I always do when I bring this up because I feel like I get completely tuned out. Right. But that's the whole point of this book, is what you can do about it. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Well, let's get into some techniques. And I agree with you. I think people think that just studying about these villains or these forces that are against us is enough, and going down the rabbit hole of the grand conspiracy and the levels of archonic layers, and you and I have talked about it, is a solution, but it's not. I mean, I know that Jesus said the truth will set you free, but people don't realize that the freedom will eventually destroy it unless you do something with it and alchemize this freedom. So, and it's almost interesting, Saul, because I will, for example, if I put some shows on stuff like archons and conspiracies, my channel will do well. But if, like, during Christmas, I'll put shows on ways to get your mind together, ways to deal with your addiction, you know, kind of helpful stuff, my ratings tank. In fact, I'm like pretty broke this holiday season because I put all these shows and I'm like, oh my God, how am I going to buy presents? Even though I knew it's the right thing to do to put out the solutions. But it's almost like people don't want the solutions. They just want the narrative, right? They want to see the conflict, the dopamine.
Yeah, they want to be victims. They're accustomed to being victims. So they're more comfortable being victims.
Yeah, I also think it's the dopamine too. Because sometimes sometimes I'm like, God, it's so intriguing. And we all love grand narratives. And it's a lot easier than the inner work, don't you think? I mean, inner work is, it's work. It's a lot of work.
It is a lot of work. It really, really is. I mean, there's a lot of payoff to it, especially when you hit a certain level, but getting into a place where you can engage this process does take time. And this is the reason, Miguel, that I spent the first half of the book talking about things to stop doing, ways to pull your energy back by that shamanic not doing. So doom scrolling. Just simply stop listening to truth, like serious hardcore truther channels that focus on all the rabbit holes. Simply stop. Political arguments, religious debates, simply stop them. There's a lot of things to do. And then in at the same time, there are things you can do that don't involve anything extra, like just pursuing a passion, following your bliss, the things that give you energy just because you love doing them and they're wholesome. There's the whole idea of simplifying your life. You know, I bring in stories that have to do with Thoreau and Peace Pilgrim and other people. Also, you know, how are you online? How are you interfacing with the online world? That's a complete parasitizing environment in so many ways because you get your dopamine hits, but you also simultaneously are constantly getting your energy extracted from you. Either you see by seeing something that you don't like, or you compare yourself to other people. There's just so many pitfalls in this environment. And a lot of studies these days show very clearly that time on social media, it has a direct correlation with your overall mental health in a negative way. And so this is not like a happy picture that I'm painting, but I want people to know that you can start by not doing things and then doing other things that you really enjoy. And this is a wonderful preparatory phase where you're kind of getting yourself together to be able to go much deeper into some of the other work, which does not, by the way, include psychology or psychotherapy or anything like that. We're talking about real direct energy work that has the ability to undo trauma, to release stress, to heal people mentally, physically, emotionally, and even spiritually, and to completely change your life in terms of your relationships, your abundance, your fulfillment levels, your purpose. I mean, this is big stuff, but it doesn't actually involve some of the things that people think of as being the most yucky, like talking to a therapist. You sort of become your own therapist. I mean, you have to look in the mirror, yes, but in terms of you know, getting involved with a clinical setting, no, you do not have to do that to do what I'm describing. I'm not a doctor. I'm not diagnosing. I'm not recommending. I'm saying here are self-therapies that you can do if you feel called to.
Well said indeed. And I would agree. And I've got an aside note. And I always tell people, look, if you're going to go, like you said, doom scroll or go on social media, have the simple attitude that Jung would have, or Philip K. Dick, be like anthropologists and a scientist or a phenomenologist. You're there to study the monkeys in the wilderness, if you know what I mean, and write down their behavior and learn from their behavior and see why they do it. And you'll find out a lot of times if you're feeling something, you're projecting, and it can help you. Like, why am I having a visceral reaction to this? What does it say about me? And it leads down to some sort of trauma or some bias you have. But somebody who I admire is David Icke, because he is like the true Gnostic. He does not change who he is. He's the ultimate rebel. Like, he is trolling Elon Musk. He's trolling Alex Jones. He trolls everybody and calls their shit. And nobody is safe from him. Like, Alex Jones was talking about the drones and, oh my God, you know, and he said the World War III has started. And David Icke has a million followers. And he's like, Alex, how many times have you said this is the beginning of World War III? When are you going to get it right? So
yeah,
that's, I thought that was pretty amusing.
I respect that too. I appreciate, you know, the no-nonsense approach.
Yeah, I mean, you've got to figure out what works for you. And again, but yeah, like you said, watch it, because it could be easily draining your louche. It could be easily blinding you and creating a false reality. And eventually you turn around, you've enjoyed that dopamine, and suddenly you just crash into a sea of depression and feeling like you have no purpose and you're overwhelmed. So yeah, be careful and see reality for what it is. But Graham, do you have a question for Saul, or how are you doing?
I'm doing well. I was going to sit there and say, I was going to throw out one of my favorite archons and interpretations on this one and see what Saul thinks. And that is, my favorite archon there is the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man from the great esoteric movie Ghostbusters.
Oh, yeah.
It's the idea of, we choose the form of our own destroyer. And that's the sort of sense of, you know, we're creating the God, we're creating, you know, whatever is going to, you know, save or destroy us. And it's up to do it for ourselves. How does that track with your ideas,
Tank? Absolutely. That's a great reference. I think it's spot on.
Yeah, you got to think of it. But yeah, you're going to think of it. Somebody tells you don't think about it, you're going to think about it. So you might as well face it.
Well, you know, some of what I get into in the work that I'm doing, like in the Pragmalchemy, you know, and it's, I didn't come up with all this stuff. There are definitely people that I'm citing, and, you know, I'm drawing off of a lot of other work and combining things in a kind of syncretic, synthesizing way. But there is a strategy where you begin to, when you're building up your power and you're working on your ability to project into different dimensional reality, sort of consciously dreaming. So as opposed to lucid dreaming, where you're actually going in awake and you're beginning to have experiences that are a lot like lucid dreaming. In those, at some point in time, there's a task where you will yourself to think of something that is unpleasant or scary and invite it into your space that way. Something hopefully rather minor. And then you have to get rid of it. You either have to make friends with it, escape it, make it disappear, integrate it, or whatever. And this is the type of shadow work that I'm actually talking about, is things like this that are extremely role player based in a way where you're in a scenario and everything is live.
You're on stage, baby. You are live to the world. And you don't think that Elon Musk is going to save us, do you?
Oh.
Or Trump or Biden, or, you know what I mean? Nobody's coming to save us.
Nobody's coming to save us. I mean, we are the cavalry. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we are the last in line, as Ronnie James Dio sang. And I don't know why I just brought him up, but it just made sense. So this year, all this stuff, most of what happened this year, next year, all the news cycles, all that, it's pretty much all just bread and circuses to you, loose traps. I mean, how do you see all this stuff? I know, like you said, you pretty much focus your life inward.
Yeah, I do. It doesn't mean I'm not aware of things, but I don't really spend a lot of time, you know, in the news cycle these days. Things filter through to me, that's fine, but I don't go looking for a lot of information. You know, I've been in this game for a while. I know you have too. I mean, well before even 2012. And I feel like we keep getting looshed with horizon events that never really show up. And so I'm pretty much thinking this year is going to be another non-event. And this talk of an apocalypse is just going to go away, and it's going to get put onto another year. And, you know, things will continue to trend badly if you have a negative aspect or a negative perspective on things, and they will trend maybe in a more positive direction if your life is moving in a more positive direction. We don't share the same reality, folks. We live in different realities, even if we're sitting in the room with each other. My world is not your world. This is pretty much admitted in quantum science, and my concept of the dreamscape and the kind of mental scape that we inhabit goes way beyond the quantum. But the quantum is always, you know, wanting that little particle to happen. But I'm saying there are no particles. there is only mind. And in this mindiverse that we perforce inhabit, we are very much in control of what happens to us at a certain level. We're not just being blown by fate and destiny. We are empowered to change that, but we have to empower ourselves to do so.
Well said. Oh my God, my lamp just fell. I think that must have been one of the, I think the dragon knocked down my lamp.
That's an agreement.
Yeah, I know, we're on to something. What other techniques do you see for those of you who might be going down too much into the rabbit hole of the luge and the truther? I think you talk about shamanistic recapitulation, imagination. Maybe share briefly with the audience these things.
Sure, yeah. I mean,
I'm going to turn off my lamp real quick. Hold on. Go ahead.
Well, one of the subjects I get into is the notion of truthing and truthers. So it's... where I'm coming from here is that people who are looking for an ultimate real in a kind of mental landscape are looking for the Holy Grail that doesn't exist, basically. So it's much more empowering to realize to what extent we go around creating our experience of what we call reality. If that makes sense. So when you spend time looking for the real, again, in the desert of the real, you're looking for this thing, right, that doesn't exist, then unless you're willing to change your mindset, you're going to keep going down rabbit holes, keep chasing your tail. And I believe ultimately you're going to be looshed because these scenarios are designed to extract your attention as well as your energy. Your attention really is the focalization of your personal power. And so when you give your attention away to a truther channel or, you know, apocalyptic channel or anything like that, where that's the main focus of the channel, then you're just basically asking for your energy to be taken from you. So I suggest doing a truther detox, where you essentially get off of all truth-based media, and I put truth always in quotes, all truth-based media for a period of time, I say a week. You know, you might go through delirium tremens. You might, you know, really have some serious withdrawal symptoms because, you know, you're a junkie if you're tuning into a lot of truth channels, and it can be unpleasant. But then the other side of that can be amazing because you begin to feel like yourself again, and you feel really invigorated, and you get new ideas, new inspirations, and your life can go in different directions. So that to me is a crucial thing to do, is just to pull away from these areas that you're plugging into that are designed to limit your thinking and extract your energy. And beyond that, of course, you mentioned shamanic recapitulation. Mm-hmm. I go into basically how to do that. There are different ways to do it, but I describe how you can use a breathing technique that allows you to pull back in energy that you've given away in your past, and in traumatic events or situations, and to give back energy that you took from other people. It's a real cleansing and a reordering of your inner space, your energy realm, your just inner spaces. So that's the recapitulation that I talk about. And then I go into an alchemical technique for absorbing and reabsorbing energy, which is, I believe, even more powerful than shamanic recapitulation. And this is really powerful because in that technique, you can not only absorb, you could do this with recapitulation, but it's so powerful in this inner alchemical technique. It's just quite remarkable what you can not only go into the past, you can even go into the possible futures, the timelines that you might have created with your worry, your stress, your paying attention to truth or channels, to the apocalypse, whatever that might be. And you can pull back your energy from those potential outcomes. The idea being that you make all of that much less likely to occur for you. You're de-energizing those possibilities. You also can go into your past, into traumatic situations and other places where you have lost energy, where you're still losing energy. You think that it's in the past, but the past is an illusion. So you're still losing all of that energy all the time. You're basically bleeding from 1,000 cuts. And you have to heal those cuts one by one by reabsorbing that energy. So that's extremely powerful. And I relate this also, these techniques, to my own work in regenetics, the regenetics method, and healing something called the fragmentary body. I think of it as the original wound. It is a part of our energetic anatomy that we lose where we're primarily looshed. It's the second chakra area, and that's where the archons, I believe, suck out our energy, straight out of the second chakra. And there's a way of sealing that so that you can stop the majority of your energy loss from occurring in the future.
Wow. Where's the second chakra?
That's the sex chakra. Hmm? That's down at the sex chakra.
Okay. I get it. Yeah.
So yeah. It's fascinating. And it has to do with also why people can't pool energy, even if they're doing a lot of powerful energy work, because they're just losing it. It's almost like a contrail in a jet. It's just leaking all of this energy as you go through your life. It's just pouring out from you all the time. And that's what the Archon or this predatory beast would have seen here with people, this energy that they were giving off. Now we're talking about sort of prehistory, you know, when maybe we were a different species altogether. We're talking when we were an unconscious species, in the sense of we lived in the unconscious, the dream time. So we might have had a different energetic structure at the time. We might not have had the fragmentary body then. I go into that discussion in the book. But in any case, when the serpent entered the garden and gave us its mind and submerged our unconscious so that we began operating with its operating system and we forgot the greater part of who we are, we also ended up with this fragmentary body. And I believe it was implanted in us as part of our new energetic structure that would allow the Archon to loose us more easily and effectively.
For sure. And it's interesting. So trauma is a wound that doesn't heal, but it's always happening, right? Yes. And the key is you don't have to heal it. You just got to stop it from taking your energy. Or how do you approach trauma?
Yeah. You know, there's this psychological psychoanalytic approach, but I find that the most effective way, and again, I'm not a doctor, but I've personally experienced and I've witnessed that energy healing at the level that I'm talking about can heal trauma and can basically change the survival or coping mechanisms, the dysfunctions that resulted from the trauma. They just start to go away because the trauma is no longer supporting that behavior. It's no longer requiring that behavior. And so you're changing something that might have taken place in what you perceive as the distant past, but it's still happening in your now and it's affecting your behavior. You either make it a little better or a lot better, or you get rid of it entirely, in which case you will see your circumstances change. And it can literally improve your physical health in addition to your mental and emotional and spiritual health.
For sure. Yeah. I like one part of your book I wrote down. The journey isn't about achieving stasis or perfection. Instead, it emphasizes embracing the sometimes ugly but more often beautiful process of becoming more of your totality, always in the now and perhaps forevermore. So that looks like individuation to me, isn't it?
Yeah, sure. Individuation is a great word. I mean, I think individuation is something that has levels to it, if we wanted to bring that in to this discussion, meaning we can individuate here in the matrix, right? We can become more sovereign. We can stand on our own two feet. We can pull away from things that we don't agree with. We can develop our own power. We can kind of create our own little reality bubbles here that may be very different from what other people are experiencing. These would all be steps of individuation. Beyond this, there is the whole idea of raising your power to such a point that you can begin to connect with your unconscious self more fully, with your dream body. Mm-hmm. And then you can ultimately conflate with your dream body. And this is where you get out of here alive and you go on off into the dark sea and you have other experiences. And that, to me, is the next level of individuation. And where that leads is the final level of individuation, which is when you return to source as the creator. You are the prodigal son returning to where it all began and realizing that you're also the father.
Indeed, for sure. Yes, for the audience, if you have any questions, we're getting towards the end of the interview. I want to save as much as possible of the book so we can talk about extra in March when it comes out. March 20th, perfect time. The Equinox, I think the dragon is busy. Now my second screen went off. It's either that or there's a cat in this room causing havoc. It's either the dragon or the cat, Saul. Both are dangerous and worthy opponents.
Very dangerous.
They get in trouble. They make things happen. So that's really a lot of advice. Do you have any words of inspiration for those who might be stuck down into the truth or hole or anything else? Get out. There's a better way. What advice do you have? Or did they just come at you with polemics when you try to do these things?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I will somewhat jokingly say, read my book. Go download it for free. Leave a review. Right. You hate it? Leave a review. Whatever. It doesn't matter. I'm just putting it out there. I'm not going to read all of my reviews anyway, because I'm sure I will press a lot of buttons and trigger a lot of people. That's fine. I just had to take this on because this was, to me, the ultimate topic. It's the topic of topics. It's where my work has been trending for years. I've been looking at the problem of mortality, what death is, and different possible scenarios for transcending death for decades now. It's always fascinated me. I've written about the light body or rainbow body. I've written about the fire from within, shamanic techniques for going beyond. All of this, you know, has just been kind of a labor of, I want to say, of love, but also of just absolute fascination and of necessity. I feel like I was put here to at least apply my attention to this topic, regardless of what happens to me and how successful I might be. Just by writing about this, I feel like I'm passing a torch into people's minds so that other people can pick that up and continue this exploration and can have their own experiences of moving in this direction if they so choose.
Indeed, yeah, this is your most complete book, and I certainly am going to have to read it again because there's so much. But it's got the philosophy, the theology, the techniques, the science. Everything comes together really well. But wouldn't you say that is the ultimate trick of the Archons to make us believe that we're going to die, and we either are terrified of it or we just won't face it. We suppress it.
Yeah, I think that. the fact that we can barely even have this discussion in the world that we live in, the idea that maybe death is optional, that you don't have to pay the ferryman, you know, is, I mean, you get looked at like you're absolutely insane, because we're dealing with a kind of consensus reality in this place of reason, reason being not logic, not true logic, not transcendent logic, but rather a kind of disease of the mind that is self-limiting. Because we're not actually seeing reality. We're just seeing a piece of reality, a little corner of the funhouse, calling that everything, right? So yes, I think this is one of many archontic tricks to lead us astray. But here's the funny thing. I felt for a very long time that we played a role in bringing this archontic energy into our space, almost like we needed a challenge. So in the story that I share in Get Out of Here Alive, when we were in the garden, we actually invited the serpent in. And what we got from that was a different experience of consciousness. It also submerged a massive aspect of our consciousness. So now the goal is to reunite the conscious and the unconscious parts of ourselves into what I was calling the totality. That's really the goal here. And we, in so doing, we can actually stop looking at the dragon, the archon, as an enemy and look at it kind of as a tough love sensei in the dojo of life.
Love it. Love it. Well, as we're getting to the end, Graham, do you have any last questions or comments for Soul, or what say you? What say thou?
I was going to say, from my standpoint, I think, you know, being afraid to die is sort of like a kid being afraid to fall asleep. It's just the same sort of process, level up. And I think too many people, their biggest fear is they're afraid to actually live their life. You know, my last question for Saul is, I'm very familiar and love Castaneda's system. And one of the tie-ins that I have tentatively is the Castaneda's eagle is basically what the ancients were talking about with the phoenix. And I see that as a way to maybe tie in some of the traditions together. What do you think, Peg?
That's very interesting. In some ways, I can see that point, because in flying past the eagle, you are growing your wings to explore the territory beyond. So yes, alchemically speaking, the phoenix is actually a terminology for yourself when you arrive at the totality of your being and you can fly forward from that point without ever having to touch the ground again. It's actually a reference to a stage of the individuation process.
Interesting. Thank you.
Yeah, cool. That's very interesting. I hadn't really connected it to the eagle or the black eagle, but that's I could see how you made that connection.
Very true.
Yeah, the idea, the redemption, the reforming after time and the consumption, that's where I was getting it from, the ancients. Yeah.
Yeah, I like that. I've always been fascinated by that particular figure. You know, it's that motivating factor, you know, it could be also the central sun, the black sun, that is, you know, the ultimate challenge, you know, that we learn to navigate. And in so doing, we transform into the phoenix.
Very cool. Well, awesome. Well, thanks for that, Graham. And for the audience, thanks for being here. As always, please support AM Byte in any way you can. Like, subscribe, all that good stuff. Don't forget, you get right now there's 30% off the Virtual Alexandria Academy with the code Solstice, or you can get all three Astronosis conferences for the price of one. But however you can, please support this show. Tomorrow we will have Chris Knowles and Gordon White do a little summary also of 2024 and see what's in store for 2025. I know a lot of people, of course, have questions about the drones, and Chris has a lot of information about that. So we'll check it out. And of course, Chris and Gordon will tell us their spiritual techniques on how to navigate this simulation as it goes through. Well, one more time, Sol, where can people find out more about you for those listening? And of course, I'll have it on the show notes. But what, send them to your Substack? That's where they download your book?
That's my hub. That's my hub. SaulLuckman.com. And we got to get you over on Substack with your book coming out. And we could definitely do a conversation on Substack. I'd love to chat with you when your book comes out.
Sure, I'm game. I am game. Yeah, let's talk about that Elvis. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Awesome. Well, again, I'll say thank you for the audience for being here. Interesting. Whatever quotes I could see was very interesting. I don't know if this is the dragon that's been causing the problems.
Oh, that's definitely the dragon.
Yeah. I think he's the one knocking down screens and my lamp and everything. I don't know. Probably needs to go use the cat box or else, well, he'll let me know. But for the audience, thanks for being here. Yeah, and first I'll say, Graham, thanks for keeping us company on this journey.
Always wonderful. And it was great to have a chance to knock some ideas back and forth with Saul. Thanks, Saul.
Hey, thanks, Graham.
Yes, Saul, as always, it's great to have you on the show. And of course, we look forward to talking to you in March about the book and and going to hang out in that in those Substack domains.
Yes, absolutely. Hey, Miguel, thank you so much once again. I really appreciate that. And I'm happy for your channel and everything looking so onward and upward that you've got going on.
Oh, well, thank you very much. Thank you. Yeah, here we go. I would have to do the audiobook. And I'm like, I need to get an Elvis accent because there's blocks where I quote him. So I gotta master my Elvis accent. David Bowie could do a perfect Elvis accent, and you hear him a lot. It's freaky.
So I was finishing your book, and the new Elvis Christmas special documentary came out. Have you watched that?
No, I haven't had that chance.
Out on Netflix, and it was absolutely fascinating.
Oh, I'll check it out this weekend.
Yeah, it's really good. Thought of awesome. You.
I'll check it out. Yeah, I'll definitely check it out. So awesome. Well, yeah, Saul, thanks for everything you're doing. And thanks for being here. And for everybody else, we shall say goodbye, the dragon and I. And we will see you guys later tomorrow. And I hope everybody has a good evening. Stay warm. Enjoy your holidays. Stop letting them loose you. Write your own gospel. Live your own myth. And take care, everybody, until we meet again.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.
Hello, I'm Kristen Meinzer, host of Health Matters, a Mayo Clinic podcast investigating topics big,
the influence of gravity,
and small,
brain-eating amoeba.
We talk about our health, bodies, and the world around us.
Get off the toilet, you're going to have hemorrhoids.
So join me in conversation with some Mayo Clinic experts as we strive for happier, healthier lives. Mayo Clinic's Health Matters, new episodes every other week, wherever you get your podcasts.